Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Happy New Year again. As we plunge into this, whatever it's going to be. You've been here before.
Not here, no.
Not here. So I thought you were. So.
I saw your ads, your coach.
Oh, that's. Okay. So let's do introductions around. You know Yap, of course.
Yap.
Judy.
And Yap.
Nelson. Violet.
Jeffrey.
Wendy.
Oh, well done.
Thank you.
This is what we're studying. It's Katagiri Roshi's book about time. Each moment is the universe. It's his notion. If you think about it, there isn't anything else. Just each moment. So we ended last time with his statement that we are already enlightened beings who are embraced by with Buddha's wisdom. Because nothing exists outside the ocean of Buddha's world. So that's very hard to understand or to accept. It's really easy to understand, but to accept that the way we think about ourselves, as I said last week, always tends to be in negative. Oh, I'm not doing this well enough, and I don't look right, and all these different things that we think about ourselves. But that's Buddha itself talking, acting, being. He says, this situation is unknowable with our consciousness. It's impossible really to express it in words. I always say it's the untalkaboutable. I was remembering from my brother. My brother's wife sent me a talk, I guess it was, on the internet. And it was all about the environment and about Darwin's ideas and how wrong they were. And there was a lot of talk about God, and it reminded me of when I was a little girl, and we would come out of church in the morning, and the grown-ups would all stand around and talk about God. And I just couldn't believe it. I thought God was such a big thing. How could you even put a little word, tiny word like that on something that you couldn't even talk about? So, and that goes, even that thought is too small. So it really is something that's beyond the beyond, and yet right here, right now, it's us and how we live. It's our wisdom. He says it's a feeling, and it's a kind of prediction or hope, a big hope. To make your life happy? No. It's completely beyond your happiness or unhappiness. It's fine if you're happy, but happiness always morphs into something else. You can't keep it ever. So what is it? We hope to manifest something that we don't know. Within the form of bowing in Gassho, within the form of offering incense, and with the form of sitting meditation. that we begin to, as we live, begin to feel the fitness of how we do things. It's like, as Pilot says, we get in sync with the waves of the whole system going, and our waves get synced up together. And we feel it. We can't explain it, but we feel it. So he says the question is, what degree of confidence do you have? This is really, really important. When you have a very strong, stable confidence every day, it's called spiritual life. Don't think of it that way. Spiritual life seems like you have to go to a place where everybody is being spiritual. But every place is the same spirit. Every place that you are. If you don't have confidence, it's called art, music, or sports. In the practice of art, oneness appears, but outside of art, it doesn't work, so you're confused. Sports, you can understand oneness, but outside of sports, you don't see it because you don't have confidence. So if you take up something and develop it, become good at it, you begin to feel it. But then you go home and have a fight with your partner or fall down in the mud and everything goes haywire. You're out of sync again. When you don't have confidence, that oneness you experience is relative truth. When confidence is always with you, oneness becomes absolute truth. To have strong, stable confidence every day, you must concentrate yourself on making the effort to constantly approach and penetrate this very moment. Making the effort to constantly approach and penetrate this very moment. It's a big job, but it's something that becomes more natural the longer we sit. Once we have been sitting and we get up, we feel a difference and begin to operate our life in a little different way. And if we can pay attention to that and notice it, we can begin to keep it going, you can say. Just stay aware and awake as you were when you were sitting. So the next part of this is a quote from Dogen Zazen Shin, which is a comment on someone, Nan Yue, who said, if you study sitting Buddha, the Buddha is no solid form. We think of Buddha as the statue of it, or the picture in a book, or the idea of it, but it's not like that. It's not even it. Say it's, we don't have a word for it. So Dogen says, the attempt to speak of sitting Buddha reaches to emo, Now, I've forgotten what emo means. He spoke about it earlier in this book. And does anybody remember? See if he tells in his glossary. No, he doesn't. The sitting Buddha manifested by one or two persons is adorned with no solid form. The Buddha's no solid form I speak of is to mention the Buddha's form. Because of Buddha of no solid form, you cannot avoid sitting Buddha. Therefore, since sitting Buddha is adorned with the Buddha's no solid form, if you study Zazen, it is sitting Buddha. Who can take or leave that in terms of Dharma of no straying? Sitting Buddha is not Buddha, or it is Buddha. Since a sense of adoption or rejection drops off from the beginning, it is sitting Buddha. I think he's saying, just do it. Don't try to make it up into something. Just do it. He said, wherever you may be, whatever you do, you must approach to this very moment. And the moment doesn't have a form. It doesn't have a color or a sound or a smell or a taste. You can't find it anywhere. You can't put it in a book and keep it or throw it away. It's just what we get moment after moment. No solid form. But it doesn't mean that it's no form. He says, when you're approaching to this very moment, you can't see time objectively, not even slightly, because your activity is time itself. And that's the basic message of this, one of the basic messages of this collection, that our activity is time. That's how we know the moments. There is no gap where you can think about this moment objectively, but you cannot ignore it because you are there. So all you have to do is just be present, right here and right now. And our tendency when we want to understand it is to drift away from it, try to get back and get a bigger view. But you can't get a view of you yourself in the moment, because you are that moment that you're trying to see. And by the time you think you can see it, it's gone. You're in another moment. So he goes on to a riff about taking airplanes and being scared in an airplane. Being scared because there's a chance you can die. Of course, the chance of dying in an airplane is so slim compared to being in the car getting to the airport. It's it's nothing at all. But one does seem to fear airplanes because it's so far down to fall. When I tell you to just be there, you immediately think of yourself objectively and grope for the idea of I. Then I splits into two people. One wants to be there, and the other is scared to death and doesn't want to be there. We have that situation so many times. There's me, and then there's me. And then we can't really navigate very easily. Our little boat goes weaving along. And so, who's in charge here? beyond thinking I want or I don't want, there's a total I, the real I. Who's that? How can you manifest the total I? You can forget yourself. Forget the airplane and just be present in this very moment. At that time, your fear drops off and you can read a magazine in peace, he says. Or a cheap novel from the airport bookshop. And he says the same is true of Zazen. People usually think that by doing Zazen they can get something. They don't understand that Zazen is just to act. When you act within the activity of your Zazen, all things come together and become just one. There's just one sitting. He says it's like a spinning top. All the colors meld and become one color. And spinning is a good metaphor, really, or a spinning top, because if you notice, when you come to sit, usually we're spinning in some sense. Our mind is spinning. It just goes round and round and round, and it's the experience of sitting is that the spinning slows down because it has nowhere to go. And slowly, slowly it becomes just one being sitting. The being being the moment itself. So, being a human, of course, we do spin. That's our encounter with everything. It's always turning in some way. And there's some Zen studies about whether it's clockwise or counterclockwise. It includes both. And how, in the end, you come to just being the wisdom and compassion that exists as a human being. There's a little symbol that stands for wisdom, compassion. You could call it love, the same thing. Includes both. But he says, when you do Zazen like this, your emotions and delusions drop off, but it doesn't mean you don't have any emotions. Here's the story maybe you know about the monk who was loaned a little hut in the back of somebody's yard. And the old lady who owned the house decided to test him and see how he was doing and sent her daughter out to be alluring and see if he would be moved by her beauty. And he told the girl, "Oh, I'm just a dead tree. There's nothing left here at all. I dropped it all off." And the girl went back and told the mother, and she went right back out there in a huff, the mother did, and burned the hut down and kicked him out. She said that monk was not practicing properly at all. He was just killing himself. So it isn't like that. He said you can't be dead trees. It means that your emotions work pretty well. You don't destroy or escape from your emotions, but when you practice approaching to this very moment every day, your emotions and delusions naturally drop off by themselves. You just get to see how that works. You get to notice it more and more, and to notice that it's just stuff. It's not real. It is real flood that comes through the body, but it definitely goes away. It's very hard to sustain any emotion. We can gin it up over and over again if we want to, but if we're really honest, we don't keep an emotion going. We can't. He says, when you exactly present in this very moment, when you are exactly present in this very moment and manifest yourself in total activity, it's called to observe impermanence. So you have to, in order to awaken to Bodhi mind, the mind of enlightenment, you have to observe impermanence. You participate in it. You don't objectify it, you just participate. The emotions come up and the emotions go away. Good stuff comes up and the bad stuff takes its place. And how much of it is in our control is a very good question. The more we set ourselves against what's happening, as if it's happening to me, the more it becomes that battle between one me and the other me, the thing that's happening and the one that doesn't like it and doesn't want it. It's much easier to go into it, because then we can clearly see at the moment, not step aside from it. He says, religion usually requires you to believe first and then act. But in Buddhism, to act is simultaneously to believe. So day by day, your zazen must be refined again and again. And then he talks about the three stages of zazen. you pass through the first two, and then you reach the third stage where zazen is zazen. I don't know how to think about this very well. It's he says, that's when it's the pure sense of activity. He says, you are a flower blooming in the whole universe, and you understand very deeply the meaning of practice related with enlightenment or truth. This is real zazen. That's when zazen becomes Buddha. This is called emo. Emo usually means what or how. But Dogen uses it to indicate truth itself, being as it really is. But you can't stay. So that's where the impermanence comes from. Even with the most intense practice, whatever happens doesn't remain. Every moment is different. Every moment is new, which is the good news and the awkward news at the same time. We would like to hold on to those good moments, and we can't do it. Nan Yue, he says, said Buddha is no solid form. But Dogen said, no solid form is Buddha. When we see only the pure sense of what we're doing, no solid form is tentatively called Buddha. But if there is no solid form, then who am I? Don't I have a particular solid form called katagiri? That's just our ordinary understanding. We exist beyond that ordinary understanding. Your basic nature has no solid form. Our basic nature has no solid form. When you dig the rich ground of your life, many capabilities come up. And Zen masters in China talked about killing Buddha very often. It's one of their favorite terms. But it doesn't mean to really kill something. It means total actualization and manifestation with no gap, no space to let something in, something extra in. And then he talks about jumping into a game. You melt into the game. If you jump into a movie audience and the movie comes on, you melt into the movie and the audience and everything. You're not you anymore. You can show creativity, but you don't know what it is. If you're making a picture or writing a poem or singing a song, you're not there anymore. The whole thing is doing it. And if you begin to come in, the idea of you, suddenly it becomes all wrong. It doesn't work anymore. He says, Buddha is something alive, constantly moving. Digest sitting Buddha and it becomes energy for your life. And that's called faith or confidence. This energy is not a philosophical teaching. It's within you already. It's within us already. All you can do is constantly, steadfastly approach to this very moment. Don't attach to an idea of yourself as either form or not form, because both are impermanent. Each appears, but in the next moment it's gone. If you attach to one when it appears, you create a discrepancy between yourself and the rhythm of nature. Then when it disappears, you're confused. So just be host to time and place, and then jump in to this time and place. And then this time and place, it just goes on and on. One thing I found, I've said this before, that's very helpful with this is to have no mirrors. When a batch of girls from the Bay Area went to Japan and stayed at Suzuki Roshi's temple for a month, we discovered in the very beginning that there are no mirrors in a temple at all. And if you get a bunch of women together with no mirrors, you begin to be in a panic. How can we do this? How is my hair looking? And after a couple of days, it was such a relief. And you realize how often we're looking at ourselves and checking ourselves and seeing if we're presenting ourselves in the right way, in a way that keeps the gap there. You can feel the gap then, because you're being self-conscious. We all do it. It's natural. We're told as children to be self-conscious. Now that's how we're brought up, to have good manners, so you have to remember how to do. And in Zen training, you have to remember what to do. And in the beginning of Zen training, it's very awkward and embarrassing, and you just die because your ego gets attacked all the time because you make mistakes. And then making a mistake, you think, oh, I made this mistake. This is really bad. This is awful. And they tell you it's awful. So then you have to really begin to think about what this I person, this me person is, that's so self-conscious and so worried about what other people are thinking, and always checking to see if I'm getting it right. You finally realize it's not ever going to be perfect, ever. So the best way is just to be there and be it, whatever. If you're doing the bells, you do the bells. If you make a mistake, you make a mistake. It's just like that, all the way through. So it's very good news, really, all of this. So when we speak of faith, we speak first of confidence in ourselves. And of course, it extends far, far, far to the edges of the universe. If we're confident in ourselves, we can trust everything and everyone. We can trust that Buddha nature itself is what we are and see and experience everywhere. We just forget when we become all tied up in our self-consciousness. So I will stop there. There's time for very little time, but a little time. Questions? Yeah.
Thanks. You know, so much of this tradition in Zen is about doing it, you know, and I appreciate that so much. But then sometimes I don't understand that some Buddhist traditions are extremely monastically focused, and it seems hard to get the same teachings if you're not as engaged in like a regular life. Like for me, this studying this complements so well of just like being out in the world.
Yes.
And that's something that I just always find conflicting. Like we saw a documentary about Thich Nhat Hanh's monastery. Monastery, you know, that was quite a radical.
I've been there, I know.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So what's your perspective on that?
Well, it's a good question. It's hard to answer. Because, as I say, Zen training is pretty strict about the forms.
Right.
And part of the strictness is just to help you shed your self-consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's set up so that it's like a performance, and everybody is doing just the right thing at the right time. And if you screw up with the bells, everybody knows, and it's just, you just about die. And then you get over it, and you realize that, oh, it's not the worst thing in the world. But it's real scary in the beginning, and the fear is the fear that myself is going to be exposed. But once it gets exposed, then you realize you're just in the moment, and whatever happens, happens. And then you're free. But you can turn those situations into a rigidity and a love of form for form itself that becomes a real big mistake. And that happens. And that's one reason that Coven did not want us to join the Soto sect in Japan, because that's how it's developed over hundreds of years into a sort of moribund situation where the teaching isn't understood anymore. It's just run on lines of what the rules are. They beat the tar out of the young monks. It's really sort of awful. And it's a bunch of young guys who really don't want to be there very often. They're just there because they have to be there. So it's not Buddhist teaching at all. Buddha did not talk like that about how to be in the world. So this is a reversion, really. And And so I think Zen gets reinvented over and over again. It just gets higher and higher and higher mighty. And if you go to the temples in Japan, you think it's going to be all smooth and empty and clear, but it's not. It's just full of golden things and dangling things, and it's very, very fancy. Hugely so. Because it's the heart of it is lost. So that's why Koban wanted to come to America. And he wanted us to learn how to bring it into the life of the world. So that's where we are. That's what needs it. So that's our job. Our wonderful little job. Thanks. Jeffrey?
Just to piggyback on what this discussion is. This within the last week, I saw on YouTube a Shingon, this really esoteric Buddhist ceremony. And if you want to see something that, and especially the monks' voices that they're using, they're practically singing sutras.
Mm-hmm.
And when I these men are in robes that look like it took a decade to create. And I was thinking what you were saying regarding this kind of formal ceremony. And it was so obvious in these esoteric Shingon rituals. It was all about the ritual. And it was, I mean, I was just, you know, jaw-dropping kind of. Oh my goodness, what is going on here?
Oh, they're very beautiful.
Oh, absolutely.
Very beautiful. And they have objects, and they pick them up, and then have to carry them and put them down. And I mean, I'm preparing for doing a little ceremony, but it's a very serious one when I'm going to ordain Balin in a month. And so I'm thinking, because we do have ceremonies, how to do it in that way, but with a much more simple style, you could say. And I can't say more sincerity, but to do it with total sincerity, however it is. But that is amazing to see those.
It struck me how far it was from Buddhist time. I just saw something evolved over a long period of time.
Yes.
To something so, it's very beautiful, it's very elaborate, it looks very costly, it looks like that sort of stuff.
Exactly.
And then you begin to understand why there are have always been movements away from that.
Mm-hmm. That we sit in the Quaker house, I think, is perfect for us. It's that they too took a teaching and brought it back to the ground again. And we too are taking the Buddha's teaching and bringing it back to the ground again as best we can. Yeah. Thank you. Well, it's a little after 8, so we should announcements. Well, we're having a 1 day sit in 2 weeks. 2 weeks from Saturday.
Yes. The
20th. The 20th, right. So that's the big news. And then the session at Jikoji, which is the next month. And everyone's invited to the ordination. You might want to come and just experience it, because it's very sweet.
Could you repeat, who's being ordained?
Balin. Balin practiced with us way, way in the beginning as one of Koban's students. and then moved away to live in the desert for many, many years, and then moved to San Diego and looked me up. And he and his wife started sitting with us at Sesshin, and little by little it's all developed into a little offshoot of Floating Zendo exists now in San Diego. And Paula was ordained and transmitted a couple of years ago, and Balin is now being ordained as a priest. Keeping that little group, creating a space for the little group, and that helps to do that. Yeah.